Here, Rabbi Yishua ben Maseira testified al dam nevelos about the blood which comes from a nevela. A nevela is an animal which has died without having proper shechita done to it. So that would include any dead animal which is not kosher, and even a kosher animal which didn't have proper shechita, proper valid slaughtering. So Rabbi Yishua ben Maseira testified that the blood of a nevela she'u tahar is tahar, and it is not a source of tumah, unlike the flesh of the nevela. As we've already seen earlier on in this Masechta, a kazayas of flesh from a nevela is a source of tumah. If something touches it, it will become tomei. And Rabbi Yishua ben Maseira says that a kazayas of blood from a nevela is not a source of tumah. Now, even Rabbi Yishua ben Maseira agrees that if there is a revius of blood from a nevela, a revius is a liquid measurement which is more than a kazayas, then it would be a source of tumah. But he's talking about a kazayas, the same amount as would be a source of tumor when we're talking about the flesh, a kazayas, that is not enough to be a source of tumor when we're talking about the blood of the nevela. Alright, hey, Rabbi Shimon ben Beseira, presumably his brother, he testified al Efer Chatos about the ashes of the Parah Adumah, Shinoga Tomei b'miktsosai, that somebody who was Tomei touched part of the ashes, and the ashes were in a container. If somebody touched part of the ashes, Shetimeas Kuloi, he makes all of the ashes which are in that container Tomei, even though he didn't touch all of the ashes, and technically speaking, each grain of ash is considered to be a separate entity, since they're all contained in the same container, and they are connected, so all of the ashes in that container would become tomei midrabanan. Now, there are really two stringencies involved in here. Firstly, strictly speaking, ash can never become tomei at all. It's not considered a significant enough substance for it to be able to even contract tumah at all. So that's stringency number one. And stringency number two is that midrabanan, if somebody touches only part of the ashes, all of the ashes would become tomei. There are many, many stringencies in the area of tumah when talking about the ashes of the Parah Adumah, since this is really the source of purity for anybody who had become tomei from a dead body. There are many added stringencies in order to retain the highest degree of purity with the Parah Adumah ashes. Hosef Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva added on to the testimony of Rabbi Shimon ben Beseira, and he took it a step further, ala seiles, regarding the fine flour which was used for a korban mincha, valakteres, and the incense which was offered up twice a day, valavina, and the frankincense which was brought together with some of the korbanos, particularly a korban mincha, vahagecholim, and the coals which were used on the mizbeach, shenoga tevul yoim miktsosom, that a tevul yoim touched part of them. They were inside a container. Let's say there were a number of coals inside one container, and a tevul yoim touched one of the coals. A tevul yoim is somebody who has reached the end of his purification process. He's been to the mikveh. He's done everything that he needs to do, and now all he needs to do is just wait until the end of that day, until nightfall, and that's when his full purification is achieved, and only from then can he continue eating korbanos, etc. So he's got a very low level of tumah. However, that level of tumah is enough that if he touches a sanctified item, then it would become tomei. And so Rabbi Akiva said that shepasalas kulam, he would invalidate and make tomei all of the other coals and other items in that container. And the reason why Rabbi Akiva is adding on is because this is a bigger chiddush. It's a more novel law because a tevul yom has a lower level of tumah. And even then, if he touches part of it, he would make everything in that same container tomei. Mishnah Beis, at the end of the previous perek, one of the testimonies of Rabbi Chunin ben Gudgudah was regarding a child, a young girl, who was married to a kohen on a midrabanan level. So she was married off by her mother and brothers as opposed to her father, so the marriage was only valid midrabanan. And Rabbi Chunin ben Gudgudah testified that she is allowed to eat trumah midrabanan. Regular trumah, which is considered trumah midaraisa, she can't eat because midaraisa, she's a regular Bas Yisrael who is not married into a family of kohanim. But since midrabanan, she has married to a kohen, so trumah, which is trumah on a midrabanan level, she's allowed to eat, and we're not afraid that she's going to come to eat real trumah as a result of being allowed to eat midrabanan trumah. Now, hey, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Yehuda HaKoyen testified and really elaborated on the testimony of Rabbi Chunin ben Gudgudah in the previous perek, al katana bas Yisrael shenisas l'koyen, regarding a young girl under the age of bas mitzvah, who was from a family of Yisrael, who got married to a kohen on a midrabanan level. She hecheles b'trumah, that she's allowed to eat trumah midrabanan. Kimin shenichnasa l'chuppah, as soon as she's entered into the chuppah and started the process of getting married, afal pishalei nivala, even before she's actually had relations with the kohen, which is considered the real final completion of their marriage together. As soon as she's entered the chuppah and done that part of the marriage, already from then she's able to eat trumah, which is trumah on a midrabbanan level. Continues the Mishnah, Hey, Rabbi Yosi HaKoyen, Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzov, Rabbi Yosi HaKoyen and Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzov testified, Al Tinoikes Shehurano B'Ashkelon, about a young girl who was given over to a group of non-Jews in Ashkelon as a guarantee for a loan. They borrowed money and they weren't able to pay back, and therefore, as per the agreement, they gave over this child to them, at least until they'll be able to pay back the money. And this girl was married to a Koyen. Now, later on, when they managed to get her back, the Rechakua b'nei mishpachto, her family members distanced her from their family, and they said that you're not able to continue being married to a Koyen. The halacha is that if a woman ever has illegal relations, even if it's forcibly and she didn't do it with her own will, she nevertheless becomes disqualified and invalid from marrying and having relations with a Koyen. And they suspected that she had had relations whilst she was captured and under the authority of these non-Jews. And so they distance her from their family of Koyanim. Whereas her witnesses, the same witnesses who testified that she had been taken by this group of non-Jews as the guarantee for the loan, those same witnesses testified that at no point was she alone or forced to have relations with any of the non-Jews. Now, truth be told, the witnesses who we're talking about were witnesses who are generally not valid to be witnesses at all. They were slaves. But nevertheless, this family wanted to accept their testimony. But they really only accepted the first part of their testimony, that she was taken by the non-Jews. But the part of their testimony that they said that they saw her the whole time and they saw that she wasn't alone and that there wouldn't have been a chance for her to have been forced to have relations with them, that part of this family didn't accept that testimony. So the Chachom said to the family, if you are trusting the witnesses insofar as they say that she was taken by these non-Jews as a guarantee for the loan, then you should believe those same witnesses and consider them trustworthy and valid witnesses, also regarding the continuation of their testimony, that she wasn't alone and wasn't forced to have relations with them. And if you're not trusting them regarding their testimony that she wasn't left alone with them and that she didn't have relations with them, because you're saying that they're invalid witnesses, so that which they said just now is irrelevant, so then you shouldn't trust them at all regarding the fact that she was even taken by the non-Jews. And that part of the testimony should also be irrelevant because these witnesses are not valid witnesses. But you can't accept just the first part of the testimony and not the second half, and then distance this poor girl from the family and not allow her to continue being married to a Koyen. Mishnah Gimel, a Koyen who marries somebody who he's not allowed to marry, for example, a divorcee. It's forbidden for a Koyen to marry a divorcee, somebody who's been divorced before. If he does marry her, then any child which they have is called a cholol, which is essentially a Koyen who has become invalidated, and all of the rights of a Koyen don't really apply. Most of the rights of a Koyen don't apply to a cholol. He can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash, amongst other things. As well as that, a cholol who has relations with any woman makes that woman into a chalola, which means that she would be forbidden to marry a koyen. If, let's say, this man dies and she becomes a widow and she wants to remarry, she's not allowed to marry a koyen because a koyen is forbidden to marry a chalola. And again, a chalola is a woman who has had relations with a cholol. And a cholol is somebody who was born as a result of a illegal marriage of a koyen, and he becomes an invalidated koyen. Nahayid Rabbi Yeshua of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira testified al almanas issa, which literally means about a widow of an issa, which literally means a dough. A dough is a mixture of lots of different things made into one. And in this context, an issa refers to a family that one of the members of that family, let's say they have a number of sons, one of the sons is a cholol. He's not definitely a cholol, he's possibly a cholol. If, let's say, there was a case where a woman was only possibly divorced, there's a doubt as to whether the get was valid, whatever it may be, and somebody married her, so the child born from that marriage would be a doubtful cholol, a possible cholol. Now, not only is one of the members of the family a possible cholol, a cholol out of doubt, but we're not sure which member of the family is that possible cholol. Either way, a woman married one of the members of that family, so essentially, she could now be a chalala. However, their testimony was that she kasheru lakohuna, she is still permitted to marry a koyen, which means that she's not considered to be a chalala. The reason for this is because there is a sfek sfeika. A sfek sfeika is when there is a double doubt. Firstly, in this case, there is a doubt as to whether she even married the member of the family who was possibly a cholol. And even if she did marry that member of the family, we're not even sure if that member of the family is a cholol at all. He's only a cholol out of doubt. So there's a double doubt over here which exists, and therefore we rule leniently, and she is not considered a cholol, and she can still marry a kohen. Now the Mishnah adds, she'll issa, because a family like this, where one of the members of the family is a cholol out of doubt, and the Mishnah is really about to say a new law, Kashira is valid in a regular way, l'tame l'tohar, to declare impure and to declare pure, l'rachik l'korev, to distance and to bring close. And the way you're going to understand this sentence is that because of the previous law, that there's a sfek sfeika, there's a double doubt, and therefore we rule leniently. We take that to the full extent, such that this family is viewed as a regular family, where all the members of the family, or all of the men, if they have relations with another woman, that woman will still be able to marry a kohen. Now, when a kohen gets married to a woman, he needs to check her genealogy and her ancestry to make sure that she is indeed fully Jewish and able to marry a kohen. There are a number of things which could invalidate a woman from marrying a kohen. Now, I might have thought that once we already have this doubtful cholol in the family, we can't really assume anything anymore, and further investigations would need to be done in order for a kohen to marry a woman who had married a member of this family. But the Mishnah is saying no, and it's really elaborating on the previous law which we stated, that the status of this family is considered to be like a regular family. Because of the Sfek Sfeika, the double doubt, we view it as a regular family, so whatever a kohen would do in a regular case to investigate the woman's genealogy and whether he can marry her, he would need to do the same with a woman who had previously been married to a member of this family in which there is a doubtful cholol. Alright, now Omar Mishum Gamliel said, Kibal Meiduschem, we have accepted and we've heard your testimony. This is going back to the first part of the testimony, that because of a Sfek Sfeika, a woman who had married a member of this family is still able to marry a Kayain. Avlamana said, but what can we do? She goes Botidin Alkach. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai already decreed not to set up Botidin, not to set up courts for cases like this, and Dakanim Shem Lachem Larachik. The Kohanim will listen to you to distance a woman, but not to bring her close, meaning although you have a very good logic of Sfek Sfeika, there's a double doubt, so we should rule leniently. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai already decreed that we're not going to rule leniently over here, the main reason being that there are a number of stringencies which we find regarding Kohanim's marriages in order to retain the pure lineage and families of Kohanim. So there are a number of stringencies which exist, and this is one of them, that even though, technically speaking, there is a rule of Sfek Sfeika that we should rule leniently, we are not going to rule leniently because of that. Alright, Mishnah Dalet. Hey, Rabbi Yosef ben Yehezer ish Tzreida. Rabbi Yosef ben Yehezer, the man who lived and led the people of Tzreida. Three different things. Firstly, al ayal kamtza, regarding a ayal locust, or grasshopper, d'chein, d'cheil, d'chon, different Mishnahs, read different things, that it is pure, meaning it's kosher. There are only a number of grasshoppers and locusts which are considered to be kosher, and he testified that this type of locust is one of them. Secondly, v'al mashke beis mikbachayah, he testified about the liquid which was in the area of the Beis HaMikdosh called the Beis HaMikbachayim, which was an area very close to the Mizbeach, where they would take the skins off of the korbanos once they had been slaughtered, and they would wash them there. They would do quite a lot of processes over there, very close by to the Mizbeach. And the liquid, meaning the blood, which was mixed with all of the water which they used to wash up parts of the animal, de'inun de'chayin, that they are pure. And we're going to understand this to mean that if they became tomei, they wouldn't make something else tomei. Even though in general, on a mejabon level, tomei liquids can make other things tomei. Rabbi Yosef ben Yehezer testified that the Rabbanon never made this law inside the Beis HaMikdosh, because we didn't want to start causing lots of tumor problems in the Beis HaMikdash, that something would be considered tome, at least on a Jabbonon level. We wanted to avoid tumor in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore this rabbinic law was never applied to the liquids inside the Beis HaMikdash. So although the liquid itself might be tome, it wouldn't make something else tome. And thirdly, his third testimony was of Yikav B'Misa Mistov, somebody who definitely touches a dead body becomes tome. But if he only touched the dead body out of doubt, if let's say there is a doubt as to whether somebody became tome from a dead body, then it is ruled leniently, as long as we're talking about in a public area, where there are at least another three people or so who are present. In such a case, the law is that a doubtful case of tumor is ruled leniently. And that is the testimony of Rabbi Yosef ben Yehezer. And the Mishnah says, based on these three big leniencies of Rabbi Yisrael ben Ezer, korule yosi sharia. The other chachomim called Rabbi Yosi Shtreida, yosi the one who permitted things. Because we can see from these three things that he was very lenient in certain matters. And in a way, this was a bit of a criticism from the chachomim, that he was possibly a bit too lenient in their opinion.